Oh, we can hear from Dr. Wolf now.
Good. Dr. Wolf.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here as always. I bring you news from Sacramento. And as usual, I'll just run through some items that I thought might be of interest, but I'm happy to discuss anything that that you'd like to discuss. First, our structural reform proposal discussions continue. As Chair Young knows, the last chair's meeting last month discussed some ideas, and those ideas are being percolated around within the administration. Because such discussions are confidential, I can't talk further about them, but there are discussions going on. And our chair, Tam Doduck, will be testifying before the Little Hoover Commission next week, I think it's next Thursday, about structural form ideas for the regional and state board system, for the water board system. Our strategic planning work continues. The full state board spent most of the day on Monday of this week discussing the strategic plan, and we'll be continuing that discussion in part during our visit to Monterey in 2 weeks, where we'll be holding a state board meeting in Monterey on April 1st. And the next step after our discussions will be a draft of the strategic plan proposed for adoption by the staff. We haven't quite reached that point yet, but that's the next public step. And I'm not sure what the timing of that will be. It'll depend on how extensive the revisions and formatting changes are that we request during our current review. Some recent policies that may be of interest to you. We heard a compliance schedule policy on Tuesday, and we closed the hearing on that, closed the record on that, but we carried over a decision on that until April 15th because we wanted the staff to prepare a different option from the one that was before us. The key issue had to do with whether the maximum length of time for a compliance schedule in a basin plan should be 5 years or 10 years. The staff draft was 5 years, but we wanted to consider a 10-year maximum. And the reason for that essentially is at least some of us don't want to subject parties to minimum mandatory penalties for a schedule that maybe takes 6 years, and a five-year cap would do that. And what's a little confusing here is that the 5 or 10 is a cap. It's a maximum. The real rule is that's embedded in the policy is as short as possible, that any compliance schedule should be as short as possible. But a lot of attention has been focused on, well, okay, if you simply say as short as possible with an unlimited time frame, there may be abuses. In fact, an audit from EPA on compliance schedules around the state that was done recently indicated there have been widespread abuses, at least in EPA's opinion. And so we're trying to be sure we construct a policy under which the as short as possible rule is the primary rule, but then there's a cap on top of that so that we have some control over abuses other than interpretation of what as short as possible means. The recycled water policy was heard on Tuesday, and we chose to allow 90 days for a broad-based stakeholder group to attempt to come up with an alternative policy. The draft policy was universally disliked. It was both too permissive and too restrictive at the same time. And depending who you talk to. But the groups felt like they could get together and come up with something better, and we'll all be delighted if they can. Both of these policies, I should mention, were put forward as an attempt to create more uniformity across the regional boards to the extent appropriate. In recycled water, we have very different decisions being made in different regions, and some of those decisions have led to delays in the implementation of recycled water facilities, which no one seems to want, but because the rules aren't very clear and the interpretations can be widely varying, we've had those sorts of delays. And in fact, the Recycled Water Task Force in June of 2003 stated that regulatory uncertainty is an impediment to recycled water systems, and they asked us to take on that issue of regulatory uncertainty and create more clarity in the rules. So that's what we're trying to do. And the same with compliance schedules. We have 6 regions where you can get a compliance schedule, 3 where you cannot. The 6 where you can get it have somewhat different rules. It's just confusing when it doesn't need to be. And we spend a lot of time in hearings that doesn't need to be spent if the rules were clearer and more uniform. Once through cooling, we're expecting to see a new CEQA scoping document in the new future for the state's once through cooling policy. Because the Riverkeeper 2 decision happened and EPA withdrew the rules that they had proposed, our staff proposal is going to be has been reshaped, and the reinitiating the CEQA scoping for the reshaped policy, and that'll be coming out fairly soon for discussion. We also had a wetland resolution before us on Tuesday, which we delayed until April 15th, purely because there were some virgin control issues. It wasn't clear. Everyone was looking at the same paperwork, and we had a very, very busy agenda, so we just delayed the issue for a month while the paperwork gets straightened out. But the wetland policy creates a development team between Regions 1, 2, and the State Board staff to develop the wetland policy for the state, which is something that I have been a strong advocate for. I think these cross-board teams are a really effective way of leveraging the resources we have and getting more with the more out of the resources that we have. And especially in this case, because Regions 1 and 2 have been leaders in this area, they already have basin plan amendments well underway. They started work 2 years ago. We wanted to be sure that the team was structured in such a way that that their work would not be delayed, that their work would continue apace while the rest of the state sort of joins into the effort through a team process. And figuring out how to make that happen has been the source of some productive internal discussions. And last, I should just mention that the construction general permit was released earlier this week, and workshops will be happening in June, and then a hearing before the full board workshops will be happening in May. Northern and Southern California workshops, and then the full tentative order will be heard by the full board in early June at our first June meeting. And unfortunately, that one I cannot discuss with you because it's a permit pending before me, so the ex parte rules will apply to that, just as any permit, you know, pending before you. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
I've got a question for you, Mr. Wolf. With the recycled policy matter, what are some of the issues that have been raised by those that are complaining that the proposed rule is too permissive?
Proposed rule is too permissive. Well,
these are the non-dischargers that are saying that the use of recycled water needs more control on it, or what?
Here, there are three areas in which there's been friction over recycled water permits. One is incidental runoff. When is incidental runoff okay? Under the Clean Water Act, incidental runoff is never okay. There's no de minimis rule in the Clean Water Act, apparently. So the policy didn't actually take that up because we have a separate venue we're addressing that issue in. The policy was focused on groundwater protection, and there were two sub-areas within that, one having to do with salt management, and the other having to do with the interpretation of our narrative toxicity objectives in the basin plans. You shall not discharge toxic substances in toxic amounts. Well, how is that interpreted in the case of recycled water facilities? And the policy attempted to establish the processes through which those decisions would be made and those interpretations would be made in a uniform way across the regions. And currently, the regional boards can decide in any way you want on those two issues. You have complete freedom. So the policy was going to restrict the way in which regional boards made those decisions. So people felt the policy was too restrictive. That was their perspective. The region should be allowed to do anything they want. Those who thought the rule was too permissive were those in the industry who felt that the state board should simply be saying, it's done this way, end of story. So, for example, in the case of the interpretation of the toxicity objective, the position of the industry has been that whatever the California Department of Public Health says should go, no more, no less. They make recommendations about recycled water with respect to protection of groundwater. Whatever they say goes, that's it. And regional boards should be obligated to simply adopt their recommendations. And the Los Alamitos order that was passed by the state board just before I joined it said that with respect to one narrow issue in the Los Angeles region, it had to do with the use of notification levels as numeric effluent limitations, which the state board said was not permissible when the Department of Public Health says it's not appropriate. We were taking that sort of general approach, rely on CDPH first. We were taking that as a first line of decision making in the policy, and the industry wanted just that. But the policy then went on to say, well, no, there are circumstances in which CDPH doesn't even have a recommendation, so the regional board should be able to decide in those cases. There were some rules for that. We reserved the right for the state board to be more stringent in the policy if particular circumstances warranted it. And so those two latter points I just mentioned, allowing the regions to do things in some cases and are reserving the right to do anything in any case, those were felt to be too restrictive by the industry.
Well, that helps. I have a different understanding now of what you were referring to. Any other, Dr. Press?
Yeah, Dr. Wolf, could you give us a sense of where the state board's thinking on SEPs currently? Are we going to see a change, or?
Well, the water quality enforcement policy draft we heard has a recommendation to allow a smaller percentage of the money in penalties to be used for SEPs than it is currently. And I don't recall. I think is it 50% rather than
25%.
I'm sorry.
25%.
25 instead of 50. Is that the? I think it's something like that.
For certain cases, it was unlimited before.
I see. So there's a proposal for 25. I personally don't. You said, you know, what is the state board's position? There is no position. Each board member is thinking about it on their own, and we heard testimony on it, but no one expressed a strong position one way or the other. I do think a couple of board members were leaning toward being more restrictive. That is something like what the state board's enforcement staff proposal was. Personally, I don't see it as a big issue one way or the other. I mean, in terms of the effectiveness of our enforcement activities, where, you know, how the money is handled and, you know, what percentage goes in SEPs and so forth is not that high level an issue. I mean, I know that it seems very important to people, and there are arguments in both ways, and certainly I'll be sure that I think about it carefully before I make any decision on it. But in terms of the effectiveness of our enforcement action statewide, this is not at the highest level by any means. There are other issues like, are we enforcing against non-filers? We have non-filers who we don't bother to track down and enforce against. That's a big deal in terms of the quality of the environment and the effectiveness of our enforcement policy. Whereas the issue of how much money goes into an SEP or not, that's after you take an enforcement action, and then it's a detail underneath that. Well, so I'd be glad to hear whatever you folks have to say about that right now.
As long as you're relatively indifferent, this board, I think we're fairly of like-minded about it, feel that the use of SEPs in this region, by and large, has proven to be quite a good success, quite a big success. We make use of them a lot. Mm-hmm. Roger and the board members have been dismayed at the idea that SEPs, the percentage of an enforcement action could go down dramatically. Because you get down to a point where you really can't do much. If your average enforcement action is not that big, right, and you whittle it down to a small percentage of it, then it's not. You're not going to have a very effective SEP. You're going to have something that's a little window dressing. Right. On the other side, the argument is that the cleanup and abatement account is a place to go for some restoration mitigation projects in the region. The board's staff, my sense, I let Roger speak for himself, is that that account is not something that is always very easily accessible by the boards. Okay, right. So we feel that keeping the money in the region, doing good projects that the staff pay attention to, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Can we improve tracking, accountability, oversight? Sure. Let's try that before we whittle it down to a point where nobody's going to want to do these things because it's not enough money. So that's my position on it, for what it's worth.
I also would echo the same sentiments, and I think SEP program that we've instituted has been very beneficial to the environment in our region. Mm-hmm. And to whittle that down would be cause more harm to the environment than just putting it into some account and used some other ways. So I would suggest you support our region in not changing that amount.
Well, I certainly am liaison to the region. I will carry your message back, and I'll think about it myself. You know, as I say, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other.
Good.
Good.
And I would like to add one comment to that.
Right.
There's another dimension to this, and that is an area that we don't see funding for very often. That's education and outreach. And I think that those programs do a lot to demonstrate not only the role of the Water Board in our region at the local level, because those projects take a lot to get these funds directed to this kind of effort, and these programs are locally based.
Right.
And so the word does go out, and we create partnerships, we create collaboration, and we create technical assistance with through that process. So they are very effective.
It's a good point, and in fact, on that point, I do have a position. I agree with what you just said. Rita Sudman, the head of the Water Education Foundation, was before us at the hearing when this was discussed, and she argued that point. And the staff position was that that such projects should be limited or not even allowed. And a couple of board members were sympathetic to that on the grounds that somehow education is fluff, while building something is stuff. And, you know, I'm an engineer. I know that building something is stuff. But I also know that in terms of the changes we reap over time as a system, that the transformation in the way people think about things is often far more important than what individually gets built. Because if the thinking changes over a generation, then all sorts of different things get built and done. And so I do support the notion of you know, to whatever extent SEPs are allowed, they should also include such educational efforts and so forth.
Yeah, and I think also it does a lot to enhance the role of the Water Board in the region. It gives us a chance to show how to fix things and take the lead in that.
Yeah.
And I know that's very important. People do have a reaction to that, and it's very positive, and it does make an impression on thinking about solutions as opposed to enforcement.
Right. I understand. I should also just... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add on that. I mean, I think too often... we're seen as an entity that's sucking money out of the region and sending it to Sacramento.
Right, absolutely.
And so the SEPs are a great way to sort of counteract that misconception.
Right. I think that that actually there are better ways, though, to counteract that. I mean, that's actually something I was about to say, that the context in which the conversation about SEPs take place is clearly sort of a wounded cultural context with some historical pain of struggles between state and regional parts of our own system. You know, we're all part of the same system, and yet we have a lot of sort of divide between region and state for a variety of reasons. And I've been on both sides of that divide. And so an entirely alternative approach to limiting the percentage of money that can go into SEPs and getting into a push and pull about, you know, money going to or from a region, et cetera, is to change the way in which money is released from the cleanup and abatement account. So even if everything had to be cash and went into the cleanup and abatement account, if there was a strong, clear, equitable way of dispersing that money back out to actual SEP projects in regions where each region could feel, you know, fairly secure that they were going to get their fair share, then that might work as well. That's a much more difficult problem to solve, but it really goes to the heart of the issue that's being raised here, whereas fiddling around with the SEP percentage just avoids the issue, which is the cultural divide. So I would love to see, for example, the MCC, the Management Coordinating Committee of the 9 EOs and the ED of the State Board. I'd love to have them have absolute control over money coming out of the cleanup and abatement account, you know, majority vote. And they get to decide, as opposed to the state board. And that along with most of the money having to go through that account, might create a much better system. I don't know. I'm not pushing for that strongly, but it's an idea I've had in terms of really addressing the underlying tension that exists.
Mr. Wolf, I'm under the impression that there are some regions that really just don't want to be bothered with SEPs.
Yes, but those regions nonetheless come to us and ask for money out of the cleanup and abatement account for a variety of things.
Okay.
So whether they were to use them for SEPs or for something else, they still want money that was gathered through enforcement actions.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we have submitted written comments, right, Roger?
A couple of times.
A couple of times, so it's there.
Oh, I know it's there.
Yeah.
I know it's there.
And I certainly echo what my colleagues have said. And hopefully we have persuaded you somewhat.
I'm certain. It's hard for me to be persuaded one way or the other. That's the difficulty, because I don't see it as the fundamental issue. I'm always trying to drive for what I see as the fundamental issue.
Okay. Well, and when this is before you, though, that'll be the fundamental issue at that moment in time, because there may not be any other fundamental issue that comes after that.
That may be true.
Yeah.
That may be true. However, at the last meeting, I said precisely what I just said to you, and I hope that the staff in revising the document will try to address some of those issues, and I'll get something better next time around in terms of how these things get handled.
Okay. Yeah. Any other comments or questions for Mr. Wolf? Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Okay.